was a great movie. And, you know, so many people just come up to us and just say, you know, we're happy and glad that this movie has been done. We're happy and glad that the book has been written, because so many people don't know her story.
Well,
don't even know her story.
Rebecca Skloot writes, one scientist estimates if you could pile all HeLa cells ever grown onto a scale, they'd weigh more than 50 million metric tons, an inconceivable number, given that an individual cell weighs almost nothing. Another scientist calculated if you could lay all HeLa cells ever grown end to end, they'd wrap around the Earth at least three times, spanning more than 350 million feet. In her prime, Henrietta herself stood only a bit over 5 feet tall. Jerry Laxwai, as we wrap up, we just have 10 seconds. How proud are you of your grandmother?
Oh, words can't describe how proud I am of my grandmother. I mean, just knowing her story and what she has done, not just for a certain group or she just did so much for the world, and I'm just so proud that I had the chance, or I'm getting the chance, to know my grandmother, to know her contributions, and to actually go out and advocate and
bring
awareness
to her story. We're
going to
have to leave it there. Jerry Laxwai, I want to thank you so much, and we'll continue part two with Rebecca Skloot, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. I'm Amy Goodman.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is your Friday evening news. But first, this.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Women's Reproductive Rights Now on Sunday, October 14th from 3 to 6 p.m. at Sunnyside Community House, located at 3520 Southeast Yamhill Street in Portland. Women's Reproductive Rights Now is an educational event to support activists fighting for reproductive rights. Speakers include Judith Arcana, Dr. Patricia Kohlberg, Reverend Emily Champagne, and Sally Castillo of Planned Parenthood. There will also be videos, tabling, food, and more. Again, that's Women's Reproductive Rights Now on Sunday, October 14th from 3 to 6 p.m. at the Sunnyside Community House in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, the time is 5:02 and it's a Friday, which means that it's time for your Friday evening news. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO members and listener support from Levin and Levine, LLP attorney specializing in personal injury law. Levin and Levine offices are located in Southeast Portland and Old Town Sherwood. More information available by phone at 503-946-8708 and online at levinandlevine.com. And it's time for the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Hurricane Michael leaves the South reeling.
A gay man was assaulted at a concert in Portland.
And the state of Washington has ended executions. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 12th, 2020. 2018. I'm Jasmine Moneymaker.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. A lawsuit filed in Portland alleges that a gay man was singled out and knocked senseless by a security guard. According to an article by Jace Wagner in the Willamette Week, the incident occurred at a Morrissey concert at the Schnitzer Concert Hall in downtown Portland almost a year ago. The plaintiff complains that a security guard working for Dead Nation Presents and Coast to Coast Event Services called him an anti-gay slur after seeing him hold hands and rest his head on his partner's shoulder, and the guard demanded that he leave the concert at once. The guard is then alleged to have slammed Vincent Maldonado's head into the seat in front of him, breaking his nose and knocking him unconscious. The National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs says that in following Donald Trump's ascension in 2017, homophobic attacks have become more numerous. They state that homicides related to anti-GBLTQIA bigotry have increased by 86% over the previous years.
Hurricane Michael, which blew up from a tropical storm into a Category 4 hurricane in only 73 hours, has so far been blamed for 16 deaths in the states of Florida, Alabama, and Georgia. It is now considered the fourth strongest storm ever to strike the United States and the worst ever for the Florida Panhandle. Hurricane Michael was just 2 miles per hour short of a Category 5 status, with winds of more than 150 miles per hour. Tallahassee, Panama City, and Mexico Beach have suffered devastating wind and water damage, and power is still out for thousands of people. Brock Long, head of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, told news crews, quote, "I expect the fatality count to climb today and tomorrow. Hopefully it doesn't rise dramatically, but it does remain a possibility." On its path northward, the storm dropped nearly 10 inches of rain in some places, and oil production in the Gulf of Mexico dropped by one-third as work was disrupted by the cyclone. Rescue workers using dogs, drones, and sensors were gathering in a number of cities along the Florida Panhandle that were swamped by Michael's 6- to 14-foot storm surge. 20,000 people are estimated to be in emergency shelters.
A monologue in the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists criticized the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's special report as insufficiently alarming. The bulletin argues that, quote, "the report, dire as it is, misses a key point, self-reinforcing feedbacks and tipping points, the wild cards of the climate system, could cause the climate to destabilize even further. The report also fails to discuss the 5% risk that even existing levels of climate pollution, if continued unchecked, could lead to runaway warming, the so-called fat tail risk," end quote. In this case, the fat tail refers to the shape of a diverging graph lines on a visual representation of different assessments of climate risk. A probability distribution with fat tails charted out would be one in which extreme outcomes are more likely than normally would be expected. Quote, "these omissions," the bulletin author writes, referring to the report, "may mislead world leaders into thinking they have more time to address the climate crisis than in fact immediate actions are needed. To put it bluntly, there is a significant risk of self-reinforcing climate feedback loops pushing the planet into chaos beyond human control," end quote. The chaos discussed would include but not be limited to methane bursts from underground and undersea deposits, which would themselves greatly accelerate atmospheric heat gain, excessive CO2 destroying mollusk and coral life in the oceans, and a 200 mile per hour hurricanes. The bulletin article, which accepting the main points of the UN IPCC report, suggests a World War II level social mobilization is needed to prevent further climate disaster.
Citing the arbitrary and racially biased manner in which the death penalty is applied, the Washington State Supreme Court has banned executions in the state altogether. The decision was handed down as a result of an appeal by death row inmate Alan Eugene Gregory, who was found guilty of raping and murdering a woman in 1996. After the decision, Washington Governor Jay Inslee said in a message on Twitter that he had long been convinced that the death penalty in the state of Washington does not pass the test of equal justice. He wrote, quote, "We know that zip code and race are likely determinants of whether an accused criminal is sentenced to death. There has been nothing equal or fair or just about that." End quote. 23 people have been executed in the U.S. in 2017, but Washington State, which is now the 20th state to ban executions, has not killed anyone for 8 years. The Washington Supreme Court based its decision largely on an exhaustive study by the University of Washington, which found that black defendants were 4.5 times more likely to be sentenced to death than similarly guilty white defendants. Black people comprise a third of death row inmates, even though black people make up less than a 20th of Washington's population, according to the 2010 census. An attorney for the appellant said that it was not knowable what the jury deliberating against the murderer was thinking. "We don't know what Alan Gregory's jury was thinking," she said. "But what we do know, based on this study, is that had Alan Gregory not been black, his chances of being sentenced to death would have been notably lower."
A pedestrian killed during a traffic crash Wednesday night has been identified. The deceased pedestrian, found by officers on Wednesday, October 10, 2018, near Southeast 138th Avenue and Southeast Division Street, has been identified as 54-year-old Lone T. Diap of Portland. A member of the Oregon State Medical Examiner's Office determined Lone Diap died as a result of injuries suffered during the traffic crash. Diep's death was the 26th traffic crash fatality investigated by the major crash team in Portland in 2018. Anyone with information about this investigation should contact Portland Police Bureau's Traffic Division Officer David Enns.
Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler discussed the Portland Police Bureau's response to last weekend's march during a press briefing at Portland City Hall today, and he had some interesting things to say.
"This is the story of Goldilocks and the two bears. The porridge is either too hot or it's too cold. At any given moment in this city, the police are being criticized for being heavy-handed and intervening too quickly, or they're being criticized for being standoffish and not intervening quickly enough."
Wheeler also encouraged the public to be patient in waiting for answers while investigations continue into the September 30th killing of 27-year-old Patrick Kimmons by Portland police officers. Wheeler also criticized protesters for blocking traffic, calling the move inappropriate.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. At 6, it's Bread and Roses, then at 7, Hard Knock Radio with Davey D. Tonight's weather will cool to a low of 46 with few clouds. Tomorrow, the high will be in the low 70s. Today in history, in 1968, the Summer Olympics opened in Mexico City after a vicious massacre of dissenters at the Plaza de las Tres Culturas. The quote of the day is from Che Guevara, who said, quote, "It is better to die on your feet than to live on your knees," end quote.
Saudi Arabian journalist and Washington Post contributor Jamal Khashoggi, who disappeared into the Saudi Arabian consulate in Turkey, is believed to be dead. Turkish officials told the U.S. that they have obtained audio and video proving that a Saudi security team detained, tortured, and killed Khashoggi in Istanbul on October 2nd. Khashoggi, who was critical of the Saudi government and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, had been in Turkey for the past year after writing about Saudi involvement in Yemen's war and the arrest of women's rights activists. Saudi officials deny any connection, saying that Khashoggi left the consulate the same day. Turkish sources have yet to release the recording of the events, saying they could not divulge how they obtained their information.
A U.S. pastor is to be released from Turkey, arriving back here Tuesday. North Carolinian pastor Andrew Brunson has been released from detention in Turkey after 2 years. Brunson, an evangelical preacher, was detained for alleged connection to terrorist groups in Turkey linked to an attempted political coup of the Turkish president Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Brunson has been living in Turkey for 20 years before his arrest, running a church in the western part of the country. He was arrested and charged in October 2016. According to the Turkish Research Program at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, the release is likely connected to Turkey seeking America's support as Turkey challenges Saudi Arabia over the recent disappearance of Jamal Khashoggi. Brunson flew out of Turkey Friday evening after being released. The Turkish court has found Brunson guilty, but only sentenced him to time served.
The ashes of Matthew Shepard, a 21-year-old gay man, will be laid to rest in the Washington, D.C. National Cathedral. Shepard was murdered in a hate crime 20 years ago in Laramie, Wyoming. His mother, Judy, said the family decided that the D.C. Cathedral was the ideal choice because of Shepard's love of the Episcopal Church, which he attended in Laramie. The service is to be presided over by the Right Reverend Gene Robinson, who is the first openly gay bishop of the Episcopal Church. And the cathedral hosted its first gay marriage in 2010 and had its first transgender preacher in 2014.
Here is today's Black History Report from Black History 365.
Black history is happening every day. It's time to start thinking of it outside of a day or a week or a month. We hope to inspire you by enlightening you with those people and events that should be learned from and forever remembered.
Today is October 12th. On this day in 1904, the pioneering 20th century physical anthropologist, Dr. William Montague Cobb, was born. He became the first African-American to earn a PhD in anthropology. The primary focus of Cobb's discipline was analyzing the concept of race and its adverse impact on the African-American community. Cobb's research and findings were publicly disseminated through popular and scholarly articles.
Achievements and events are not confined to the past. Make sure to etch your own path in the pantheon of human history. This has been Black History Month 365, BAM 365, where you find every day Black history is made.
And now, the Middle East Minute from KPFK Radio in Los Angeles.
I'm Esty Chandler for the Middle East Minute Plus. Laura Al-Qassam, a 22-year-old Florida native who landed at Israel's Ben-Gurion Airport last Tuesday, expecting to start her studies in human rights at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, instead has spent the past week detained in the airport jail. Al-Qassam has appealed the deportation order issued by the Israeli Ministry of Strategic Affairs based on her file on the highly controversial right-wing Canary Mission website, which accuses her of supporting the nonviolent Palestinian-led boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign. Al-Qassam, who arrived with a valid student visa, has become the focus of a debate around Israel's growing intolerance of critics, as 400 academics from Hebrew University of Jerusalem and other Israeli schools have called for her to be allowed into the country. The U.S. State Department on Tuesday refused to answer questions about Al-Qassam's case, saying only that it is up to Israel to decide who it allows into the country. In other news, Israeli occupation forces demolished two more Palestinian homes and confiscated solar panels in a neighborhood in the south of the occupied West Bank city of Hebron yesterday. Speaking to Quds Press, the coordinator of the Anti-Settlement and Wall Committee, Ratib Al-Jabor, said both homes were demolished under claims of having been built without building permits, which are impossible to obtain. The area the homes were located in is surrounded by Jewish-only settlements and has come under increased attacks by settlers protected by occupation forces, who also confiscate any new equipment donated to residents, including mobile homes and solar panels funded by the European Union. Prior to the demolition, occupation forces closed the roads leading to the area to prevent activists from attempting to halt the demolitions. This has been the Middle East Minute Plus, a joint project of KPFK and Jewish Voice for Peace.
And now, headline excerpts of On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital by award-winning journalist Esther Ivoram.
Welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital. I'm Esther Ivoram. And in a week like so many weeks that ranged from the terrifying to the comical to the absurd, Brian Kemp, Georgia's Republican Secretary of State, running against Democrat Stacey Abrams, is holding up 53,000 voter registrations, 70% of which are from African Americans, as he exploits a 2013 state rule that voters' application forms must exactly match Georgia's existing state records for every resident. The voter purge is just Kemp's latest attempt to disenfranchise voters in Georgia. In August, the Randolph County Board of Elections rejected his proposal to close more than three-quarters of the majority black county's polling places. Here in D.C., in addition to holding an unprecedented second swearing-in ceremony for Kavanaugh at the White House, during which Trump continued to call Kavanaugh's accusers liars, he wrote an op-ed published in USA Today in which he erroneously claims that proposed legislation for Medicare for All will take away quality health care for seniors. Senator Bernie Sanders, author of the legislation, released a video that pretty much said that Trump is a liar.
I find it doubly ironic that not only is Trump lying again, but now this guy who proposed and fought for cutting 32 million Americans from the health care they currently have by eliminating the Affordable Care Act. This president, who in his last budget proposed a $1 trillion cut in Medicaid, a $500 billion cut in Medicare, this president is now acting like he cares at all about health care for seniors or anybody else.
This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, Voices of Resistance from the nation's capital. I'm Esther Ivarum. And now we're turning to this week's international news with the author and activist, Professor Gerald Horn. And Gerald, I want to first go to what is believed to be the gruesome murder of U.S. resident and Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi inside the Saudi Arabia consulate in Turkey. Now, I started out this week thinking that this bold apparent killing was one step too far for the reigning Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who reportedly hatched a plan to lure Khashoggi to Saudi Arabia. But then Thursday, Donald Trump said from the Oval Office that he would not let this incident get in the way of the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia, which buys $110 billion in weapons from the U.S.
Well, I think it's possible that the de facto leader of Saudi Arabia, colloquially known as MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, has overreached. First of all, he overreached in 2017 when he slapped a blockade on Qatar, the small Persian Gulf monarchy, which then caused this monarchy to establish a very close alliance with Turkey. Keep in mind that the alleged supposed crime took place in Istanbul, in Turkey, and apparently the Turks were monitoring very closely and carefully the Saudi consulate, and apparently has video and audio recordings that point to the possibility, or if not probability, that there was a murder that took place there just in the last week or so. Then the Saudis overreached with regard to this Yemen war, which has not only proved to be a catastrophe in terms of human rights suffering in Yemen, but also has exposed the Saudi military as not being up to snuff, despite the fact that, as your comment suggested, it has been armed to the teeth by the United States of America. And I should also say that this debacle involving Saudi Arabia has given a wonderful opportunity to the critics of Mr. Trump to club him with this, not least since his son-in-law and advisor, Jared Kushner, has been a close ally of MBS, the de facto ruler of Saudi Arabia. It's also interesting to note that Mr. MBS overreached when he detained in the last year or so a goodly number of the Saudi elite, including his cousins, basically involved in a shakedown where he extracted billions of dollars, supposedly for the Saudi treasury, although as it's turning out, some of it probably went into MBS's pockets. And this brings us to this investment conference that's to take place in Saudi Arabia in the next few days. The New York Times, which had been a sponsor of this conference, apparently has backed out under pressure. We need to pressure Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan Chase, to back out as well. And in any case, I think that Mr. MBS has been proven to be too big for his britches, because not only has he tried to have close relations with Washington via Kushner and Trump, but he's also been turning up in Moscow. The Saudis have rather good relations with China as well. That's not going down very well with regard to the U.S. ruling elite. Probably they feel that they can find a puppet in Saudi Arabia to rule rather than the 33-year-old MBS. And it's possible that he will be pushed out, although more likely what will happen is that he'll blame this apparent murder on a rogue actor in the Saudi national security establishment, who will then be jailed for a year or so and then be quietly freed and then moved to the French Riviera.
Well, we haven't gotten to the end of that story, so we'll definitely keep watching it. So next, I'm really interested in a story, I believe reported by the New York Times, that talked about indicted Trump campaign official Rick Gates requesting proposals in 2016 from an Israeli firm to create fake online identities and use social media and other tools to basically help Donald Trump defeat his primary challengers and then Hillary Clinton. And this company is staffed by former Israeli intelligence officers. And even though there's no evidence that Trump used the company received a $2 million check from the United Arab Emirates Crown Prince afterwards. So this just seems to feed into these discussions we've been having about how Russiagate is really like Israelgate, and they don't have any proof about collusion in terms of what Russia did, but there's plenty of mounting evidence about Israel being involved in election shenanigans.
Well, the story that you mentioned raises broader and wider questions. When I read the story, the first thing that came to my mind, interestingly enough, is the case of Harvey Weinstein, the disgraced Hollywood mogul, now on trial or about to go on trial because of his sexual harassment offenses, including rape, according to the Manhattan DA, that may lead to him serving a long jail term. What's striking is that Mr. Weinstein apparently hired a similar firm involving former Israeli intelligence agents to investigate the women and to slime the women who were charging him with these various offenses. I should also mention that the Forward, the weekly or the monthly out of New York that covers Jewish affairs, just had a very striking story on an organization called Canary Mission that gathers dossiers and intelligence on pro-Palestinian activists and works very closely with the government of Israel and apparently with Israeli intelligence too, and presumably targets U.S. nationals who are involved in pro-Palestinian efforts, which then brings us to the Las Vegas casino billionaire Sheldon Adelson, very close to Mr. Trump, very close to the Republican Party. In fact, it's just been revealed that in order to save the bacon of the Republican Party, he's pumped tens of millions of dollars into the GOP coffers for these November elections that are coming up in a few weeks. If we had a more honest and robust press in this country, there would be an immediate call for an investigation of all of these aspects of Israeli interference in U.S. internal affairs, but I'm afraid to say that it's left to we of Pacifica to try to do this enormous task.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 12, 2018. Here are the main points once again. The U.S. South is reeling from Hurricane Michael. Washington State has abolished the death penalty. And a gay man was assaulted at a Portland concert. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Russell. The producer is Teresa Mitchell, and our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama. The interim directors of Evening News and Public Affairs are Sam Bowman and Teresa Mitchell. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, and a transcript may be found on kboo.fm/blogs. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Jasmine Moneymaker. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour burrows down to the roots of the greatest issues of our time. At 10, on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein looks at government deals to underwrite the fossil fuel industry. She'll talk to the senior organizer from the Columbia Riverkeeper. At 11, Project Censored welcomes contributors to Censored 2019, their annual compilation of stories and analysis. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. Good night, Linda.
Good night, Jenna. And good night, Jenna.
Good night, everybody. It's 5:30. That means it's time for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, adding to the ravages brought to Puerto Rico by Hurricanes Irma and Maria was the failure of the island's communication systems, with virtually